Now that brings us to chapter 2. And we see now Nehemiah's request of the king and his return to Jerusalem and his review of the ruins of Jerusalem. Now, will you notice this? Well, this is rather important. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him. Now, this is where the 70 weeks of Daniel begin, right at this particular point. Now, he says, in this 20th year, he was before the king, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I had not been before time sad in his presence. Now, this man, Nehemiah, as we're going to see, he's a delightful fella. I'd love to have known him. He's the kind of a layman that you like, and there are many laymen like him. Now, he had a political job. He was a cupbearer. Now, a cupbearer did this. His function was anything brought to the king, like a glass of wine, he tasted it first. And if he didn't fall down, then the king, he would take it. He had a dangerous job, too, by the way. But a man that was in the presence of the king all the time soon became, shall I say, a friend of the king. Naturally, he would be. And many times I think the king, when a decision was before him, would ask the cupbearer, so what do you think about this matter? Well, in time, the cupbearer became sort of an advisor. He was a member of the cabinet of the king. And he actually had a very important position. Now, Nehemiah was in the presence of the king all the time. You can see why probably he didn't return. He hoped that someday he might be able to use this position to help his people. Maybe that's the reason he asked about him. Now, he's prepared to make a request to the king, but he's not quite ready. And this day, he doesn't feel very good. He's had this bad news. He's been fasting. He's been praying and been mourning. I think his eyes were red, and he didn't look happy. And as he says here, now I had not been before time sad in his presence. He's a bright, cheerful fella. Everybody liked him. But this day he's sad. Now the king notes it because it's so unlike Nehemiah. Wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid. Nehemiah said, I didn't know it showed. He said, I tried to conceal it, but I wasn't able to, apparently. And the king asked me the point-blank question. He said, now, why are you sad? You're not sick physically, so it must be sorrow of the heart. Something's troubling you. Now, the king said to him, tell me what it is. And he was very sore afraid. Verse 3, and I said unto the king, let the king live forever. And the cupbearer always could say that, you know, wholeheartedly, because, you see, he tasted what came before the king. And he hoped the king stayed in good health, and he hoped he did too. And if the king stayed in good health, he did also. And he said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchre, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then he just blurted out, as it were. Why, he says here, why shouldn't I be sad, O king, my master? Why, the city, my city, the place of my father's sepulchres, my fathers are buried there, it lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire. Now notice this. He says, so I prayed to the God of heaven. Now this is the first time this word so occurs, but it occurs 32 times. And this man uses this word as a shortcut to get around a lot of protocol and a lot of flowery verbiage that doesn't mean anything. You'll find he goes always right to the point, doesn't beat around the bush. He says, so I prayed to the God of heaven. Right there in the presence of the king. The king said to him, what do you want? You evidently want to make a request to me. What is it that you'd like to ask me? And so Nehemiah just bowed his head, closed his eyes for a moment, and he prayed to the God of heaven. I think it's a very brief prayer, but he says, oh, Lord, help me. I am in a tight spot. notice what happened, verse 5. And I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou would send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. Said, I'd like to go back and help back there, if you just grant me a leave of absence. And the king said unto me, and notice this, it's in parenthesis, the queen also sitting by him. Not only was this man Nehemiah a young man, I think he was a handsome young man, and he had a very good personality, because court business is very boring, by the way. And I have a notion that many times the king would get involved in some, you know, petty political matter and have to settle it, and it'd be discussed. And so the queen was bored by it, sitting by his side. So she just, you know, started a conversation with Nehemiah. She said, where'd you go on the weekend? And he said, oh, I, you know, being a Jew, why, I went to the synagogue on Saturday. And then I took a little trip up the Euphrates River, and we had a boat down there, you know, and we did a little fishing. Probably something like that. It was talk along that line. And what happened was this. The king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him. And you know what happened? She liked that young fellow, Nehemiah, and she nudged the king in the ribs, and she said to him, let him go. That's what he wants to do, let him go. Then notice what the king said. The king says, how long shall thy journey be? I think he started to say, well, now, you know, this is a busy season. It's going to be difficult. Nehemiah will let you off, and I don't know whether we can spare you or not. And the queen there nudged him and says, let him go. And then he says, well, how long will this take? And when wilt thou return? King liked him too, you see. We want you back here. Well, he could go into detail here, but he doesn't. Notice what he says. So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Nehemiah's going to get down to business, friend. Oh, there's a lot of wasted verbiage today. I listened the other day on the TV to one of the committees of our government, of the Houses of Congress, were meeting, and they were hearing different witnesses concerning a certain matter. And they were listening to a certain lawyer. Did you know I listened to him for 15 minutes, and he could have said what he said in two sentences? Well, he sure did string it out. He took advantage of the fact that he was appearing before this committee and that he was on TV. And I want to tell you, he used a great deal of excess verbiage. His could have been cut down a great deal. And Nehemiah doesn't waste that. He says, so it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah. This is a difficult trip through dangerous country. Give me letters that will help me, and a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace which appertain to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Nehemiah said, I just trusted the Lord, but I didn't mind asking the king for it. Now, don't you blame me for telling you folk that we want you to support the radio program. One man said to me, don't you trust the Lord? Sure, we trust the Lord. But he wants us to tell you about it because he wants to speak to your heart. And he opened the heart of the king here so that this man now knew the hand of God was upon him. Verse 9, then I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. You know that he went up with half the army of Persia. This man, I tell you, was well protected. But the interesting thing is, you remember back in Ezra, that Ezra, he was a priest, and when he went in and requested of the king a permit to go, he wanted to ask for that, but he'd been so eloquent in telling the king how God would take care of them and God would lead them. He said, I was ashamed to ask him for help because he'd say to me, aren't you trusting the Lord? Well, he was trusting the Lord. But he couldn't go back and ask. Now, God did take care of him. But this man, Nehemiah, he's a layman. He's a government official. He has a right to ask for this. You see, friends, God's not going to lead all of us alike. He'll lead you one way, and he's going to lead me another way. I made a mistake, even in the beginning of my ministry, trying to imitate a certain preacher. He was highly successful, great preacher, great man of God. And I thought, my, I ought to, you know, I want to be like that man. And I tried it. And one day, an elder of my church called me up. He knew me, known me ever since I was 14 years old. He called me up and he said, Vernon, he said, I want to have lunch with you. And I went by the bank where he was vice president, and he and I went to his club for lunch. And all he said to me as we sat there, you know, said, we'd rather have an original Vernon McGee than an imitation anybody else. That's all he said. Friends, that's all he needed to say from that day to this. I haven't tried to imitate anybody, and Lord help the man that tried to imitate me. But the thing is, what a tragic thing it is for one man to try to duplicate the other man. God won't lead us alike. Now, Ezra goes up with no support whatsoever, and here comes Nehemiah with half the army of Persia with him. God will use both, if you don't mind. Then we have in verse 10, when he got there, already there's opposition. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. These fellows we're going to meet, there's a threesome here. Geshem the Arabian, we'll meet him later on. These were the enemies of God and the enemies of these people, and tried to hinder the building first of the temple, and now they want to hinder the rebuilding of the walls. You see, with this man coming up with this tremendous entourage of servants and soldiers, everybody in the country knew about it. They said, who in the world is this? Well, they said, this is the cupbearer, the Secretary of State down in Persia. And he's come up to help these people. He's one of them. And that word got around, and the enemy was grieved. They didn't like that. You know, it's always interesting who gets the good news. It's owing to who you are, whether it's good news or not. The gospel's not good news to the enemies of the gospel. It's anything but good news. Now, will you notice here, he says, verse 11, and right here he could have written two or three chapters about how he came up to Jerusalem and, my, what the thrilling experiences he had on the way. Well, notice this. He says, so I came to Jerusalem, and I was there 3 days. That's it, so. You mark down every time he uses the word so. It's rather important. He's cutting down on a great deal of words. And we talk about word power. This is word power in the absence of them. Now, notice what he does. He did not want to stir up undue alarm. So, verse 12, and I arose in the night, I and some few men with me, neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem, neither was there any beast with me save the beasts that I rode upon. Now this man went out at night, no entourage of servants now, this is no parade. He just goes out under cover of darkness and he makes an inspection to see what the real condition was. He's a real layman, isn't he? This is the way the businessman would do it. Verse 13, and I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well into the dung port, and I viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Then I went on to the gate of the fountain, and to the king's pool, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. The debris was so bad that he couldn't even ride a horse, go horseback. So he had to dismount. Then he says, verse 15, then went I up in the night by the brook, and I viewed the wall, and turned back, and entered by the gate of the valley, and so I returned. That's it. That was the inspection. And the rulers knew not whither I went, or what I did. Neither had I as yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. You see, this man is using caution. good judgment in doing God's work. I love to see certain men that I know that are laymen today do a thing for God. If I may be personal, we have here in Southern California a group of men that are on our Through the Bible radio board. They meet regularly, and it's always a great encouragement to me. I'm no businessman, and very candidly, I need advice. And it's marvelous what these men do. I just listen to them as they discuss certain things. And every now and then one will take me to lunch, and he said, "Now look, here's something that I think is important as far as radio is concerned." And you know, I never thought of it before. This man Nehemiah, he intrigues me. You know, I'm anxious to follow him, going to see what he's going to do. Now, having made the inspection, evaluated the work, and made this proper survey, he called a meeting, verse 17. "Then said I unto them, Ye see the distress that ye are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's word that he had spoken unto me, and they said, Let us rise up and build." Now Nehemiah called a meeting of the leaders in Jerusalem and in the surrounding area, and he told them how God had led him, that he'd taken this leave of absence, he'd come to Jerusalem, that he'd already made the inspection, that he saw what the situation was, and now he says, "Let's do this. God's with us. Let's do it." And then they all responded to his enthusiasm, and they said, "Let us rise up and build." Now, Nehemiah was a real leader, a God-inspired leader. And what happened? Well, here's our familiar word again. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Now, he could have given us a great deal of excess verbiage here again, and told about how they came together and how they responded to his leadership. But Nehemiah doesn't do that. He's a very modest layman that stays in the background. Now will you notice verse 19. "But when Sanballat the Horonite, and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king?" Now, here was the enemy. Three of these are nice little trio to have around you, friends. And I suppose that every man of God not only has wonderful laymen around him like Nehemiah, but he also has a few of them like Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem, the Arabian. And the enemy will use different methods to try to discourage you. And generally the first one is to laugh at you and ridicule you. I remember that when I was first converted, I worked in the bank, and I went the limit. I must confess, I was in grave sin there. And I never shall forget when I made the announcement I was resigning and that the Lord had called me to the ministry. I want to tell you, I didn't know you could be ridiculed like that. And I left there. I never shall forget the day I walked out of the place and how discouraged I was. I felt like just giving it all up and going back and say, "Look, fellas, I was kidding you. I just want to come back and be one of you again." Well, I soon found out I was frozen out, and I lost a lot of my so-called friends. They really were not, because they didn't go along with that, because they believed in it was the days of prohibition, drinking that rot-gut liquor in that day and running around. And so I went back to school. Oh, how discouraging it was. And I found out since then, when we began this radio program, why, very frankly, the very man that should have supported this radio, why, they ridiculed it. Why, they said they didn't believe in it. And they don't believe in it to this good day. And yet we started out with one program, and I had the support of some good men. And they said, "You can do it." And I must confess, Along the way, I got very discouraged. And we just believe God is in it, you see. But the enemy started out ridiculing. But he doesn't do that anymore. That is the first phase of the devil's warfare against you, friends. He'll have the folk make fun of you and ridicule you as a Christian. And you'll find the going extremely rough. Then notice what happened. This man Nehemiah, I can't help but love him. I hope you do. Verse 20, he says, "Then answered I them and said unto them, The God of heaven, he'll prosper us. Therefore we his servants will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem." What Nehemiah said is this. He said, "Get out of my way. We're going to work. And God is with us in this." How wonderful. And God was with them.